Good morning. We'll call this meeting of the Education Finance Committee to order. The first order of business will be approval of the minutes dated March 17th, which Representative Anderson has dutifully read and told me are in perfect order. Are there any corrections, additions, or changes to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. One order of business before we move on to the delete all amendment, the 934 amendment. There's been a rumor going around that there are free coffee and donuts available. My apologies, not in this room. That's a different room. So thank you. The first, what we'll do is we're going to, the chair will move the A110176 delete all amendment, which is the bill that is before you. This is the delete all amendment. Are there any discussion to that? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The bill is before us. Okay. And also, just remember, in terms of signing up for testimony, we have the pages have a sign-up sheet over there. So if you're interested in testifying, by all means, please come down and put your name on that. And at this point, what we're going to do is If you have not already signed up. At this point, we're going to have Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom, as well as I believe Ms. Larson will be talking a little bit too about the delete all amendment. Before we begin, I just want to first thank Tim Strom, Greg Crow, and Lisa Larson for all the work that they did, not only this weekend, but over the last weeks and months. Everyone in the public should know that these are the true rock stars that really allow the function of government to happen and do a lot of great things. And literally without them, we could do nothing. The place would seize up and we would all look like fools and we'd get nothing done. And I just wanted to take the time to thank all three of them for all the work that they put in. And the reasonable and unreasonable demands that we ask of you, you never have a problem meeting those. And on behalf of the committee, I just wanted to say thank you to all of you for all your work, okay? So Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom, please begin. Oh, and then the A4 amendment, members, is an amendment to put the bill in the form that the spreadsheet shows. Is there any discussion to the A4 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please.
Mr. Chair, wait.
Representative Greiling.
Could you explain that?
Sure. Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow?
Mr. Chair and members, there were some changes that had to be made to the bill to fit the appropriations listed on the spreadsheet. And so this is really technical changes that will be explained as we go through the spreadsheet. Just to tie the spreadsheet to the bill.
Representative Greiling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The A4 amendment is adopted. Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow to the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, if you would pull out your spreadsheets, we'll start with those. You have two landscape spreadsheets. One says Education Finance Committee 2011 Session Appropriation Tracking in the upper left. The other says Education Finance Levies in the upper left. And we'll start with the Appropriations Tracking Sheet and then walk through the levies second.
I would...
Representative Greiling?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just need to point out here for members, but also watchers in the room that the spreadsheet we're now going through is comparing biennium to biennium. And we also have in our packet a spreadsheet that's comparing base to base. And for those who aren't familiar with this, the difference, comparing base to base is what we've always done in this committee in order to be able to tell what is really going on. So by changing it now to biennium, that's, I would call it the same thing as changing the passing cut scores in testing. If you lower the passing cut scores in testing, then you can pass the test. It looks like you, the school is making improvement. We've seen this actually all over the country as No Child Left Behind ratchets in. But now we're doing that in this committee. So this, the spreadsheets we're going through, which aren't the same as we've ever done in this committee, are going to make it look more rosy for schools. And you need to, members and public, look at base to base. That's the accurate comparison that we've always made, that the nonpartisan fiscal staff always has us do. So I just have to register strong objection to the spreadsheets that we're now going through. They're not accurate apples to apples from last year.
Representative Greiling, before we go to Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom, I have to ask my friend, I don't know what you're talking about. You're looking at this spreadsheet right here?
Mr.
Okay, all right, got you. I was looking, I thought we're walking through the main spreadsheet here, so I understand the trade-off with both those. Now I understand. I thought you were referring to the master spreadsheet that we were going through.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, I think the gentleman doth protest too much. I think, Mr. Chair, you know very well the difference between appropriation from biennium to biennium and base to base. And when you're trying to imply that the ones we're looking at are the regular ones, and the other ones that that are DFL caucus asked to be included in the packet that otherwise wasn't going to be in the packet is the accurate one compared to the way we've always done things in this committee.
Representative Greiling, we're going off base.
Mr. Chair?
This is house over base. This is compared to base.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'm glad to know that. That wasn't what I was told,
okay,
and that's
sorry.
Why we asked to have these included in here, and I'm glad to see that that is what you're going to do.
Okay. And that will be the first compliment of the day. Thank you, Representative Greiling.
Maybe the last.
Maybe the last one. Okay, thank you. Is there any other questions? So,
Mr. Chair, is that an Emily Letella moment?
A what?
An Emily Letella moment? You're probably too young to know Saturday Night
Live.
Yeah,
you're right. I am too young. So we're just going to go with Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom. How about that? All right, Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair and members, again, if you pull out your appropriation tracking sheet, I would just, as we go through, to sort of make it easy for you to figure out what the change items are, there's a couple of things that you should note on your tracking sheet. The first column from the right and the fourth column from the right say difference house minus base. And that is for each of the bienniums that we're tracking on the spreadsheet. And that's where you can see what changes the bill, House File 934, actually make to current law to change revenue either or to change aid appropriations either up or down, cost or savings relative to base. And so that's kind of the key columns for you to look at to see where changes are happening. Some of those changes are outside in off the first page. The majority of those changes are going to come because the bill includes changing the aid payment schedule from 90-10 for fiscal 12 and 13 to 70-30 for fiscal 12 and 13, and then back to 90-10 for fiscal 14 and 15. And so you're going to see changes in that column that aren't necessarily decision items on their own. And the way you tell whether there's a decision item is in the first column where it describes the program change. You see in the header it says program italics equals changes. That means if the program is italicized, it's a change item that actually is a decision item for the committee. So, for example, on line 10, the general education program, that's the base appropriation, and it's down, if you look under the difference house minus base for 12 and 13, it's reduced by $1,171,000,000. It's not italicized because that's not a change item. That's the impact of the shift of going to 70-30 for fiscal 12 and 13. And further, in the far right column for fiscal 14 and 15, you see the appropriation is up $1,171,000,000, and that's to pay back in fiscal 14 the shift that's made in 12 and 13. So the 70-30 is for 12 and 13 and is restored to 90-10 in 14-15. Italics equals program changes. If it's not italicized, then a change item in those columns means it's a shift change. So with that in mind, we'll go through the spreadsheet line by line on focusing on the change items. You'll see a calculation on lines 5 through 8 of the basic formula. For fiscal 12, the basic formula is increased by $31 per pupil to $51.55, an increase from the previous year and from base of 0.6%. For fiscal 13, to $5,210, an increase over 12 of $55 or 1.1%. And then in fiscal 14, $52.50, an additional $40 or 0.8% over the fiscal 13 basic formula amount. That change is then costed out on line 13. You see the basic formula, the title of the program, basic formula increase to $52.50. That's a typo, because that's in 14, it goes to $52.50. But basic formula increase, and it's delinked. In other words, the compensatory sparsity formulas do not go up with the additional formula amount, and that costs for the biennium $87 million, and that increase along with the additional increase in fiscal 14 costs $258 million in fiscal 14 and 15. Line 14 in the general education program, T&E, training experience aid, is eliminated. There's a savings of about $300,000. Line 15, extended time. The current formula is based off of 4,601. This increases extended time formula to 5,124 starting in fiscal 13 at a cost of $6 million. The aid entitlement is about $9 million a year for that. You'll see in some cases where shifted programs, I'll mention the aid entitlement to tell you the total cost of making that change, but you only have to pay for 70% if it starts in fiscal 13. So on line 16, there was a provision, a bill that would have that allows sparsity revenue to continue when there are extenuating circumstances relating to closed buildings. That's included in 934 and costs $359,000 for the biennium. In line 17, there's an additional small school revenue that provides 8% of the formula allowance on a sliding scale for districts up to 1,000 pupil units of enrollment. So at zero enrollment or one, you'd get 8% of the formula. At 999, you'd get 999 one-thousandths of the formula per pupil. That costs $15 million in 12 and 13. The entitlement is around $22, $23 million. On line 18, the January 15th deadline is repealed in the bill. That shows up as a cost because there is $700,000 per biennium built into the forecast to basically a penalty revenue collected from school districts or not paid to school districts. And that shows up on line 18. On line 19, there's a provision in the bill that removes the grad exception back 1 year, which presumes that there'll be additional students in the system. That takes effect in fiscal 15 at a cost of $13 million. Line 20 is one. There are a couple provisions that you'll see in various places on the spreadsheet. This is one of them. Any provision that affects the number of students in the public school system shows up in this on this first page. as an expense or as a savings, depending on what the pupil count does. And then the decision item will show up later in the bill as well. So on line 20, the conversion of the Purpich Center for Arts Education into a charter school adds students to the public school system, since the Purpich School is a direct appropriation and those pupils are not counted in our per pupil formulas. So converting them into a charter school adds students to the per pupil formulas at a cost of about $2 million this biennium and on an ongoing basis. Line 21 is the early graduation achievement program, which takes students out of the public school system by providing scholarships for post-secondary education. So you see a reduction of a little over $1 million on that line from students leaving the public school per pupil system. Line 22, low-performing schools enrollment options. This provision will also show up in Article 2, where we appropriate money for the scholarships for these students. These are the students that leave the public school system for the non-public school system. So there's fewer pupils to be paid on the per pupil formula. You see a savings on that side of the equation of about $16 million in the current biennium and $55 million in 14 and 15 in the tails. Line 23 is the taconite bill you heard that basically restores a general education offset for taconite proceeds. In this biennium, and there's not much savings, about $170,000, and then about $4 million in the tails. On line 24, the governor recommended, and this bill includes, a methodology change in the property tax shift. Right now, the property tax shift is calculated against net levies before or after property tax aids and credits paid to school districts. This changes it to pay them after or to pay them before on the gross levy, which creates more shiftable levy, which generates additional savings of about $14 million. Line 25 is another property tax shift line. There are some increases in levies, and we'll look at that on the levy side. There are some increases in property tax levies that are not shiftable levies, and because the goal of the committee target for levies was no levy increase this biennium, the operating capital levy is reduced to balance out the other levy increases, so that there's no net levy increase in fiscal 13. The operating capital levy going down, the operating capital levy is a fully shiftable levy, and that levy going down results in lost shift savings. Now, if that the other levies that were going up were shiftable, the net shift amount would stay the same, but some of the levy, and we'll see it in Article 4, but some of the levy, particularly the alternative facilities levy, is the aid that's eliminated generates additional alternative facilities levy in the debt fund, because the debt fund is for payments for bonds. It is not a shiftable levy component, and so shiftable levy, even though total levies stay the same, the amount of shiftable levy goes down, and so there's a cost in lost shift savings, and that's what you see on this line of about $8.2 million.
And for those who are interested in testifying, there will be test questions answering these questions. Just be prepared for that. So, Mr. Crow. No, not really. The laugh wasn't quite as joyous as I thought it would be. Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair and members, line 26 then is the governor's recommendation and the bill you heard on allowing the state academies for the deaf and the blind to have trial placement. of students in their facilities, and there's a small savings from doing that. Line 27 is the operating capital equalizing factor is increased, netting about $17 million in levy reduction, and that's what I was just talking about. To keep the levies for fiscal 13 even, additional aid has to be paid out to reduce those some other levy. In this case, it's the operating capital levy, and paid on a 70-30 basis. That costs about $12 million. And I'll note the levy change on the levy sheet when we get there. Again, lines 32, actually. Lines 40 is the next change item. You see some other changes, but those are primarily shift changes or technical adjustments. Line 40 is not a change item. There's no change there. Line 41, compensatory pilot formula aid, is a new program that for the 10 largest districts in pupil count provides $1,500 per pupil. Over and above their current compensatory revenue, and for the next 10 largest districts provides $1,200 per pupil of additional $1,200 per compensatory pupil, so free and half reduced, of additional compensatory aid on a one-time basis for fiscal 12. It is shifted, so you see it in two lines, but the total cost for that one-time program is $17 million.
Question.
Representative Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is these 20 districts, how many were in the compensatory pilot before? Is this the same number, or are we adding some in?
My recollection is four, but I'll let Mr. Crow or Mr. Strom answer that.
Mr. Chair and members, the largest district is Anoka-Hennepin, and they qualified under the old compensatory pilot programs, and they would get additional funding under this new pilot formula. Mr. Chair and members, the Rochester School District gets a $165,000 grant, and they would qualify under the new program. The Osseo School District qualifies for a pilot grant, and they would qualify. They would qualify, but they don't receive revenue because they're already above the $1,500 per pupil. And the Robbinsdale School District qualified for a small grant. They would qualify, but they are also above $1,500, so they wouldn't get it. They wouldn't get it, even though they qualify. They wouldn't get additional revenue. And the other two districts that qualify for the grants are Brooklyn Center and South Washington, and they do not qualify for the new program. Oh. Oh, I'm sorry, South Washington does qualify. So Anoka-Hennepin gets additional money and is in the current program. South Washington gets additional money, is in the current program. Rochester qualifies for additional money and is in the program. Osseo and Robbinsdale qualify but do not receive additional revenue. And Brooklyn Center does not qualify for the new program but is in the current program.
Representative Greiland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So all the districts that got it before, even if they don't qualify for this new program, they still get it for 1 year, or are the smaller districts cut off here?
Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling, the current program stays as it is under in current law. All the districts continue to qualify for their named district grant. And you see that $2.175 million on line 40 continuing.
Well,
Representative Greiling.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Crow, then, so this does not get rid of those grants. They are still there, in all their glory of inequities for those who don't get it. But for some reason, we're adding in 20 districts now for 1 year, and then some of the ones in the original pilot actually get more money for 1 year, and then the whole thing just goes away.
Yeah, Representative Greiling, under the old format, what was happening is that individual districts just kind of had had an appropriation. District X got dollar Y. And under the new program, what we're doing is we're trying to address the issue of larger school districts that have high compensatory counts but are not benefiting from the concentration factor. And this was a source of much discussion, and in our visits to schools and in the testimony from the minority members, it was very clear that taking existing compensatory dollars and flowing them from one school district to another was not the way people wanted to go. So what we're attempting to do is, rather than take those high concentration schools and bring them down, is for no other factor than the large school districts that have large pupil counts of compensatory pupil units, we're actually making a formula change. So as school districts get bigger and they have those high counts, they would then qualify for it. And the expectation would be that should this become law, that when this, we don't need a task force or a report, we can come back next year, have those districts come to this committee and explain exactly how they were using those dollars, how it was benefiting or not benefiting it. It's sort of a, I don't want to say a one-year sunset, but in a way for us to take a look at it. But it was not picking out individual districts as has been done in the past, where we kind of pick winners and losers. We made a formula change to determine eligibility and criteria. And did you want Mr. Crow to chime in on that? Okay,
no.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that helps me a little bit, but not a lot, because I just think this is a very flawed proposal. I think it's in the new Minnesota Miracle, we do reform and make more fair compensatory revenue. It's not that I'm not for that. But in that bill, we actually get rid of the grants because they are kind of haphazard. They help the districts that get them, and there's good reason for that, but there are others that could be added to the list. But this doesn't change that or reform that in any way, but yet it gives a one-time infusion for the 20 districts, which you're now describing as a pilot, that we could then look at continuing it. But, this whole bill, I'm just wondering how we're accommodating the tails. And here, for this, it seems we're accommodating them by having it be a one-year pilot. But I would say for districts that get this on a one-time basis, and then they're not going to get it again unless we come up with the money, no matter what they say about their success, I think it's kind of a very unworkable situation. Districts will always take one-time money, but what can they really do with it that's going to be resulting in long-term, authentic programs that can help students when it's just kind of a fly-by-night funding thing? So my question, Mr. Chair, is other than have it be a pilot, are you really intending to continue it, and that you just didn't have the money to continue it here? Or why is there $17 million on a one-time basis here and nothing after that? I just don't understand that.
Well, Representative Greiling, it's the chair's belief. I'm an optimist, and I think the economy is turning around, and I see jobs being added. And it would be the hope of this chair and the goal of this chair. This would be something that we could not only maintain but expand at some point in the future. Based off of the forecast we have right now, we do not those dollars are not listed, but that would be the intent of the chair, is that we've had this ongoing discussion year after year regarding compensatory funding, and we would like to see that that issue addressed by getting addressing that concentration factor, and I think this is the best way to address that. But I am certainly, as we go through this process in this committee and the and in future hearings, if members do not support those, they can certainly offer amendments and take that out and allocate it in other ways that they wish. Well, Representative Greiland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just say one last thing. I think this does anything but create equity, because the pilot districts have ongoing funding. Mm-hmm. I think three of them even have more. These other 17 or so districts get one-time money, which is hard to know what to do with. I don't think you can count on it being ongoing when we aren't, if we're not going to take care of the deficit any better than so far I've seen in the global outlook and all the bills here in the legislature. And then, on top of that, you have the problem about, what about the 21st district and the 22nd district? You know, if you're going to have a sliding fee or a range based on a variety of factors, you know, to me, just to pick the 10 largest districts may not be the best criteria. There could be some districts that are in the 30 or 40 size that actually have greater needs than those 10 large ones. I'm not sure. Poverty and size of district is always linked. We have some very poor, small, rural districts that that wouldn't be on this list. So while I appreciate the attempt to do something for fairness, I think this is flawed and not necessarily even equitable.
Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Devney, I'd like members to be able to walk through the bill first before we do line-by-line items.
And I would like a quick question.
Please,
Representative. Quick question or two. Number one, can you remind which bill we heard and who was the chief author to propose this change in the integration, or excuse me, in the compensatory pilot program?
Representative Davney, we had a session dedicated to the overview of compensatory, but we did not hear a specific bill authoring this specific item.
So, Mr. Chair, previous to today, there was no public hearing on a proposal to make this change in compensatory education.
We did have public hearings on the concentration factor and the overall amounts, but your statement is correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And secondly, what metrics are you going to use to evaluate the effectiveness of this new change in the compensatory pilot program? Consistently from your side of the aisle this year, I've heard, what's the purpose, what are the metrics, how are we measuring the outcomes? But I'm hearing from you now, with this new change in the compensatory pilot program, that districts will come back next year and tell us whether it's working or not. But it occurs to me that the bulk of our legislative session next year occurs before the state testing, and well before, and hopefully the entire legislative session occurs well before districts get the results of the state testing back. So since they can't use the state tests, the MCAs, to evaluate the effectiveness of this new funding strategy, how will they, what are the metrics that you're envisioning, and where can I find them in the bill?
And Representative Davney, those are good questions for us to have later on this afternoon and this evening. At this point, I would prefer to go through the walkthrough of the bill to allow us to have public testimony. We have many, many public testifiers here, but both you and I will be here tonight, and we can cover those items, and I would appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Greiling, I'm going to call on you one last time, and then we're going back to the walkthrough. Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, my question is, what is the procedure here? It seems to me quite odd that we're going to walk through the bill and not take questions, but you're wanting to hold all questions now while we walk through and we have our questions fresh on the tips of our tongues, and you're going to just walk through the bill, no questions and no comments, and then at the very end we are going to go back and ask our questions and make our comments. And then we're having testimony, or are we not going to get a chance at all to make our comments and ask our questions?
Representative Greiling, I would prefer that we take questions regarding the walkthrough of the bill from House staff in terms of presenting it, in terms of questions regarding the content, what it is the majority is looking to do, Those are things I would prefer that we can wait for tonight. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't understand that. Did you say you would prefer to take questions with the staff?
Well, right now, usually the way this works is when we go through the walkthroughs, members will offer questions and say, can you explain that provision to me? What is that? For example, the 1500 and the 1200, mm-hmm. items like that. In terms of questions of the chair, why are you doing this? How come you're doing this? Those are conversations we can have tonight, and that's usually the way we've done it in this committee, so that's the way I'm going to do it today.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you. So we can ask our questions now of the staff as we're going through, and what does this mean, and all the questions I asked, like who are the districts, how many are already getting it, how many are added on, and so forth, of Mr. Crow. We can ask questions of Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom as we go through. I thought you meant we couldn't ask any questions at all. So the only questions we can't ask at this time are the ones I asked of you, of why. But to try to understand what we're doing when it's fresh on our minds as we're going through here, those we can ask as we go along.
Well, Representative Greiling, as I stated, the purpose of the walkthrough is to explain what the bill is in terms of the motives, the policy connotations behind it. I don't think it's fair to ask Mr. Crow or Mr. Strom to explain what's in my mind. And I know that you're a bright woman, and you can remember those questions later on tonight when we're back here.
Mr. Chair, I like that answer better, because we can't ask our questions as we go along. That's what I thought you were stifling,
sure.
But you're not.
And what we'll do is we'll break it up into chunks, Representative Greiling, as we have in previous years. We're not going to, members can drop themselves notes, and we'll come back to those items.
Thank you.
Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair and members, the next change is on page 2. If you look at line 77, integration aid, innovation aid, there's a final payment for integration aid, which is eliminated in House File 934 for Minneapolis and St. Paul and reduced for Duluth. This provision basically eliminates the concept of integration revenue and replaces it with the idea of innovation aid. You'll see a reduction in an ongoing funding amount for some districts. And we can get into the details when we go through the bill language. Line 78 should be italicized. Magnet school and program grants, as recommended by the governor, are eliminated at a savings of $1.5 million. The next change item is line 96. The school grading system bill that was heard costs about $3.5 million in the current biennium and $38 million in the tails. Line 97, I mentioned that on some issues such as this one, low-performing school enrollment options, you'll see different lines for the same change. This is the payments that are made to the non-public schools on behalf of the parents or for those students choosing to enroll in the non-public schools at a cost of about $19 million this biennium and $53 million in the next biennium. Line 98 is $300,000, $150,000 a year for the Principal's Leadership Institute. The next change is in Article 3 on the Special Education Program. Both the regular and excess costs programs are capped programs. Under current law, the regular special education regular cap increases at a rate of 4.6% per year. And the excess cost cap increases at a rate of 2% per year. In House File 934, those caps are reduced in both cases to zero, so the caps don't increase. The actual savings in this biennium from that change is about $100 million. The balance of what you see on that line is shift changes. The
Mr.
next
Chair.
Change is...
Mr. Chair, I have a question for Mr. Crow.
Sure, if we can just let him finish just that one section, we'll come up. You'll be first on the list, Representative Greiling.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I was done with that section.
Oh, well, there you go, Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, that's what I thought. It's kind of a short section. Mr. Crow, Mr. Chair, Mr. Crow, this is a section that I think we all need to understand. Could you get me some? I noticed from one from the 12 fiscal years 12 and 13 over to 14 and 15 that this line item goes up, and I'm wondering if we keep taking it out, will it just go up proportionately, or will it start going up exponentially?
Yeah,
Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, this is one line where the shift, the shift creates problems all the way through the spreadsheet when you're comparing biennium to biennium. What's happening is that the, if you think about it on an entitlement basis, which is how the cap is calculated, without looking at the shift amount, the special education cap right now is right at about $800 million, and so that number will continue flat. There's a slight adjustment each year for changes in pupil count, so it actually grows a tiny bit, but it's basically flat from now forward. The spreadsheet you can see in fiscal 12 and 13 almost appropriates $800 million because the appropriation is flat, but you can see if you compare to base in 12 and 13, it was $980 million and $870 million. Well, that was really just paying back the shift in 12, and then the actual appropriation in 13 of $870 million on a 90-10 basis. Well, that all gets taken off because of the shift change, and then the growth that happened, which is about $50 million a year, gets taken off because of the going to zero on the cap. And then under House File 934, the funding goes back to 90-10 in fiscal 14. So you see the big jump to $965 million. That's paying the base amount, but it's also got an extra payment in from going from 70-30 in fiscal 13 to 90-10 in fiscal 14. So that's really just additional. That's just shift payment. That's for the fiscal 13 entitlement. And so, you know, if we did a spreadsheet just on entitlements, you'd see a flat number. You'd see growth in base and flat under House File 934. And on an ongoing basis, that number is going to stay around $800 million on the entitlement basis for this whole four-year period.
Representative Greiling?
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Strom, what I'm trying to get at is not what we're fund. So, in other words, the cross-subsidy isn't growing because we are capping it and freezing it?
Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, the subsidy is kind of defined as the amount of special ed money that districts pay out of their general education funding rather than out of their dedicated special education funding. Because this reduces special education funding in 12 and 13 on an appropriation basis of about $100 million on an entitlement basis of a bit more, that's how much the subsidy is going to grow during 12 and 13, and special ed costs are growing pretty substantially, and so a 0% increase in the cap means the revenue doesn't grow, but we know the expenditures are growing, so the subsidy will get larger each year as revenue stays flat and special education expenditures grow.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Crow, that's kind of what I was asking. Not obviously, if it's frozen, it's going to stay the same, but I meant the actual cost that the real districts will have to pay. How much, what kind of leaps and bounds is that taking that we are not any longer covering?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, I think the expenditures are growing at about 8% per year, and so that's the amount that will get added to the subsidy every year.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will add my comments about what I think about this provision later.
Thank you. Mr. Crow and
Mr. Chair and members, that takes us to Article 4, Facilities and Technology, and I should just note that each of these sections is divided by article, so if you're looking for something on the spreadsheet to walk it back to the bill, this is Article 4, Facilities and Technology. On line 115, there's a provision in the bill that allows districts with maximum effort capital loans to repay their loans early and have their interest on those loans forgiven. That generates some one-time savings to the state general fund that don't appear. They appear at the bottom of the spreadsheet because they're not in an appropriation that's in the education bill. And so on line 15, 115, what you see is that districts will have additional levy, and that will create some debt service equalization aid. So you can see that going forward. And then I'll point out on the levy sheet and on the bottom of the aid sheet where the savings is. Then on line 116, alternative facilities aid is eliminated for fiscal 2013 and later at a savings of $17 million this biennium and $38 million in the tails. That finishes page 3. The next change is down halfway down page 2. That the next change is halfway down page 3 on line 157, and line 158 are sort of together in the bill. The early childhood rating system and the early childhood scholarships. There is $1.75 million in one-time money. Or in the first year of the biennium, and then $2 million in the first year of the next biennium for the rating system, and then $6 million this biennium for scholarships for early childhood programs, with an ongoing amount of $5 million per year starting in fiscal 14. Then on line 170, the next change is a cap on the growth factor on adult basic education aid. Right now, the growth factor is 3% per year. The governor recommended reducing it to 2% per year, and House File 934 reduces it to 0%, eliminates the growth factor in ABE. And so ongoing spending is not in, the entitlement does not increase automatically. That completes page 3. The next changes are on page 4. The first change on page 4 is line 195, a reduction to the State Department of Education's base operating budget of $6 million per year, which amounts to approximately 32%. There are several pass-throughs that come out of the agency budget for the boards of teaching and school administrators and the Children's and Duluth Children's Museum and the Academy of Science, and those appropriations are not reduced. Then on line 203, the state academies, as part of the governor's budget, had proposed restructuring their food service delivery at a savings of $309,000 per year, and that's included in this House File 934. And then on lines 215 to 217 are the appropriation changes that result from conversion of the Purpich Center for Arts Education to a charter school beginning in fiscal 2013. The conversion itself saves the state making the $7 million annual appropriation. The direct appropriation that currently supports the activities at the Purpich School, all of the employees would be terminated because they would no longer be state employees, regardless of what happens to the school. So the state has severance costs of a little over $2 million. And then on line 217, the Department of Administration needs to manage the facility and prepare for sale of the facility. So there's $100,000 for the sale of the facility that's available until the facility is sold, and a little over $300,000 of ongoing facility maintenance costs that the Department of Administration would be responsible for. That concludes the aid payment budget. And the next changes are on the top of line, or page 5. And those changes are all to appropriations that are sort of outside the education aids budget. Line 246 is the shift impact on tax aids and credits budget. Tax aids and credits are appropriated in the tax bill, but they're the payments for aids and credits to school districts are paid on the same payment schedule as other education aids, so the conversion from 90-10 to 70-13 for fiscal years 12 and 13 generates savings that in that budget that are counted here because the law change is made in House File 934. And the same thing happens on line 247 with the maximum effort capital loan refinance provision that's in House File 934. Technically, what happens if school districts pay back those loans is that the money is deposited in the maximum effort loan repayment fund, which is then transferred to the debt service fund, which is where the appropriations for the state's bond payments are made out of. Because an additional $28 million would be deposited in that fund for debt service payments, the debt service appropriation that's made by the Capital Investment Committee goes down by $28 million, or the transfer from the general fund for that appropriation goes down $28 million. So that savings is reflected on this spreadsheet because the law change, again, is in House File 934. Then on line 248, the bill requires that that the Department of Natural Resources not withhold money from the revenue stream from permanent school fund lands for mining activities to expend on minerals management activities in the Department of Natural Resources. That, in and of itself, would create a shortfall in the Department of Natural Resources budget if those activities were to continue, and the shortfall is about $2 million, so there's an appropriation in the bill to the Department of Natural Resources, which obviously is the bulk of their appropriations are made in the Environment and Natural Resources bill. That's why it's down here at the bottom. But there's an appropriation to the DNR of about $2 million beginning in fiscal 13 and later for those mineral management activities so that they would continue. And that brings you to your bottom line on line 252. That's the line calculated for target purposes that includes all of the education changes and the non-education changes in the tax aids and credits, capital investment, and environment and natural resources budget. You see under House recommendations fiscal 2012-2013 that the proposed budget is $14,158,064. You see at the bottom of the page on line 301 that the target for the committee is $14,158,064, and so that target then is met by the appropriations in the bill. Relative to base, there's a reduction of about $1,465,531 in fiscal 12 and 13, and in fiscal 14 and 15, the bill spends $1.4 billion more than base. Both of those numbers reflect a significant amount of changes in the shift from going to 90-10 in 2012 to 70-30, and then from going from 70-30 in fiscal 14 to 90-10, basically in paying back those shift amounts. And so it's also important to look at line 265, which is the general fund expenditures that don't include those shift payments, to sort of see what's happening in appropriations after netting out those shift changes. And you see that the recommendation for base, or that the February forecast for base without shift changes, is $14.322 billion, and the House File 934 is $14.301 billion. And so the House, the 934 budget is about $21 million below base, not including shift changes in the current biennium, and basically at base in fiscal 14 and 15. And then finally on lines 269 to 275, there's an appropriation for the out of a different fund, so it's tracked separately for the from the Special Revenue Fund for licensure by portfolio for the Board of Teaching.
Is that it, Mr. Grip?
That's it for appropriations, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions now. I just had one before. The one from before is, could you remind me, Mr. Crow, for that $28 million for the maximum effort capital loan provision on line 247, for that one-time $28 million, how much, again, do we lose in interest that we're forfeiting and having the state pay for it?
Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling, the current capitalized interest amount on those loans is $43 million, and they have several years until they are either canceled or the districts can start paying back at any time their value increases enough, but they have 30 years or so on a couple of them, and so the balance would continue, the interest would continue to accumulate if the districts don't pay on them.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Crow, I remembered a figure of $71 million. Where did that come from?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, $71 million is the total amount, so $28 million of principal and $43
okay.
million of interest.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. My second question, Mr. Chair, Mr. Crow, is the $21 million below base. And before, when we looked at the targets, we were $11.2 million below base. So how did we get another $10 million lost here to the students?
Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling, the target, while we talk about it in reference to base or prior year or governor, it's really a hard number, and it's that $14,158,064. That's what's in the budget resolution, the number on line 301. And so if anything changes in those comparisons, then that comparison changes. And what changed between $11 million and $21 million is that some of the entitlements that are shifted were reduced. For example, special education. And the money that was, and there's multiple places where there are reductions to shifted programs. And some of the additional spending in the bill is not shifted. It's paid on 100% current basis. So when you calculate the change after shift, there's actually, if you look on... it doesn't show because of the basically, because there's smaller shiftable entitlements, you have less shift savings in the bill, and so those shift savings, since there's less shift savings, that there's less to offset some of the reductions, and so the change after accounting for shift savings goes down by $10 million because there's just that much less shift savings.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Crow, so that lost $10 million, did that, and it didn't get spent in this bill then, did it go to the bottom line for other committees?
Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, it didn't go anywhere. It just didn't get shifted, and so there's less shift savings. The money that's appropriated is on line 252, and that's $14,158,000. It's just, how do you account for changes relative to shifts, and so there's $10 million less of shift savings. So basically, there's less to shift into fiscal 13, but the same amount gets spent in the current biennium. It's just you save less on the shifts, and
that's how we roll in the Education Finance Committee, right, Representative Greiling?
So, right, Mr. Chair. So now I can say education was cut $21 million instead of $11.2.
Mr. Crow.
Madam, Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, relative to base excluding shifts, there's the reduction is $21 million.
As I said, thank you.
Yeah, as you said. Commissioner, we're going to really quick just go through the levy spreadsheet, and then I want to be respectful of your time. We'll put you to the front of the list so you can testify, and then you can dispense with the rest of your day. So we'll go through that as briefly as we can. Okay.
Sure. Can I still sit here?
What's that?
Should I still sit here?
Yes, you can. Well, it's your choice. You don't have to, and if you want to, you can. I was going to have you go and then go with the levy. So, Mr. Crow.
Mr. Chair, I will make this very quick. There are only a couple of actual changes on this spreadsheet. You'll see a lot of really small changes, but most of them tie into the fact that there are pupil changes because of those issues we talked about, or those policy changes that are made that take students out of the public school system. When there's a change in students, there's a change in levies that are calculated on a per-student basis and things along those lines. That's the bulk of the changes you see on this line, so or on this sheet. Line 9 is the operating capital levy reduction that I covered pretty extensively on the appropriation side. This is where you see the levy reduction that's made to save or to reduce the overall levy change to zero. Line 11, it relates to the taconite provision I talked about. Line 12 is the additional pupils in fiscal 15 of the because of the math, the graduation exception removal. Line 13 is the early graduation achievement program, again fewer pupils. And 14, low performing schools enrollment options, assumes there are some pupils that move out of the public school system into the private system. And the changes on line 32 and 47 are also both related to the change in the number of pupils. That's why they're not italicized. Line 60 is the elimination of alternative facilities aid on the pay-as-you-go districts, which adds about $3 million of levy. Line 63, the building lease levy goes up about $600,000, and that's for the TIES building maintenance and or deferred maintenance ongoing levy costs. And then if you go down, the next change is line 106. That's a policy change, and that's the levy component of the early repayment of capital loans, the additional levy that happens because of that. And line 117 is the reduction in alternative facilities debt aid, or the elimination of debt aid, which